Hello, everyone.
My name is Tom Regan, and I'm a licensed addiction counselor and a certified grief counselor for HeartView Foundation in Bismarck, Mandan, North Dakota. And welcome to a program that we call Recovery Chronicles, a program on which we celebrate recovery and the recovery community. So thank you for joining us. A very special guest today, a name that might be familiar to you. Her name is Michelle Lindblom, and I know her as a fine artist and as a professor of art at Bismarck State College for many, many years. I'll ask her to fill in the blanks there, but welcome to our program today, and it sure is good to see you. I haven't seen you in a few years.
Yeah, thank you, Tom, very much.
So tell us about everything you did at Bismarck State College.
Oh, sure. I began teaching there when my husband and I moved back here from the Chicago area. I think it was early 1990s, and I taught part-time. And then I took over the gallery, and slowly but surely, I became full-time in 2000. And then about in the art department, taught mostly drawing classes at that time. And then I became a department chair in 2004, and I did that for 10 years. And I was teaching painting and drawing as well as being the department chair. And then in 2014, I stepped down as department chair and just taught for a year. And when I had stepped down as chair, I knew that I was going to retire from higher ed and that my husband and I would probably be moving away from North Dakota. And then I would be working full-time with my art. I've always had a gallery space, a studio space.
I remember that. Downtown Bismarck.
Yeah, downtown, yes. Right. And I've always worked on my own work, but didn't have a lot of time to really experiment and do the things that I wanted to, which is fine. I love teaching. I miss it. Mm-hmm. But it was time for me to move. And it was time for me to move out of the state. Well, I felt it intuitively.
Yeah, we'll have to talk more about that. I knew you were a very popular teacher and professor. Tell us a little bit about your growing up years in Bismarck, North Dakota, or in North Dakota.
Sure.
I mean, a lot of people know your family. I know other family members of yours.
Right. Yeah. I was born and raised here. I have two brothers and a sister. One brother, Michael, still lives here. And my brother and sister live in the Minnesota area. My mom still lives here. My dad died about 12 years ago.
That I recall that.
Yeah.
How could that be 12 years old?
Right. I know. It's been a while. I grew up here. It was a small town back then. It was like $25,000 people when I was younger in elementary school, and went to junior high, Hughes Junior High, and went to three different high schools because my parents moved. I went to Century, I went to Bismarck before they split. That's what it was.
Okay.
Because in 1976, I believe they split. So Century was built and then I had to go to Century, which I didn't like. Sorry, Century fans, but I didn't like it. I liked Bismarck High. And then my dad got a job in Minnesota. So we moved to Minnesota. There again, I didn't want to move, but and then I ended up staying here with a friend instead of moving.
Yeah,
it's just kind of weird. It was a weird high school time for me, traumatic in a lot of ways because I went to three different high schools, moved away, came back. It just was a tough time. It was a tough time.
I was going to ask you, where did you study art?
Well, I did not. I never believed in taking a straight path. Uh-huh. after I graduated from high school, I went to BSC for a semester, then I quit. Mm-hmm. And then my parents said, well, sorry, we're not going to pay for your education anymore. I don't blame them. So I was kind of on my own. Then I got a job, and then I went back to BSC to the graphic arts program and, completed a year of that, and I was just kind of floating around. Then I went to Mary College when it was still Mary College for a year, and I was in special education, which I don't know why I chose that, but it just was the path that I was supposed to be on. It's just when I look back at it now, it's just the way it's supposed to be.
Right.
And then I went to Moorhead for a semester, and I couldn't really afford to be there, so I came back here, and then I settled on BSC for a couple of years, so I did get a two-year degree there, and that's when I think it was right after that I met my husband, and at that time I was 25, so, It was not a straight path. I was not doing the usual path that most people took. So we dated and then got married and moved to New Orleans right away because I finished my undergraduate studies there and he did his residency there for the first 2 years. So I loved it. He had a choice of either going to Fargo or New Orleans as far as residency. I said, oh, we're going to New Orleans. That's where I want to be.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'm not too sure he... Yeah. You know,
you said residency. What does your husband do?
He's a physiatrist, physical medicine and rehab. So he was the director of the rehab here in town at Sanford or Med Center One at that time. But anyway, so we were there for a couple of years, and that is where things in my life changed totally because it was like being in another planet.
Isn't that something? Yeah.
Like being in another planet because the culture there was so unusual and so diverse, and I met so many unique people. And my school experience was very good there. My college experience was very good there. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about myself. It was difficult being away, but it was probably the best thing that both of us ever did was moving away from North Dakota, you know, just to seek out new opportunities and open up our minds. And then after 2 years, he wanted to change residency programs. I was done with my undergraduate degree, and we moved to Chicago.
Yeah. Another one of my favorite cities.
Yeah. Chicago was a great place to be. And there, I spent the summer we moved there. I mean, he was doing his residency, which was very difficult. You know, residency is hard, and he worked very hard. And I spent the summer in kind of a depression because it was a new place, but I wanted to be there. But I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know if I wanted to go back to school, if I wanted to work, or what. But eventually... I worked with a job agency, and I got a job teaching first through eighth grade art at two private schools.
Nice.
And the pay was really crappy, but the parents believed in art education, and they gave me the money I needed for supplies. And that was probably one of the better, besides living in New Orleans for 2 years, that was one of the better experiences for me, career-wise and just personally, because working with those kids was just a hoot. I was totally exhausted at the end of each day, totally exhausted. But what a wonderful array of minds to work with first through eighth grade, you know.
And what a city. I mean, you probably know I'm a music lover.
Right,
and,
right.
I've been to New Orleans three times. One time was during Mardi Gras, which everybody has to.
Yes.
But then another time was during the New Orleans Jazz Festival. And that was one of really... Mm-hmm. One of the greatest experiences of my life. Mm-hmm. And so,
so much culture.
You just have to take all that in, don't you?
And the same with Chicago, too. I was able to visit some of the museums and the galleries there. And that was just a very good experience. And then when my husband was done with his residency, I did do some more graduate work when I was there, too, because I was a perpetual student. I loved, you know, I hated high school. Yeah, but I loved college. Yeah. I loved taking classes that I chose to take. So once he was done with his residency there, then he was offered a job back in North Dakota. And I'll be honest, I did not want to come back here. I really didn't. But I thought, well, you know, now's my chance to do my art and do what I want. I mean, he's going to have a good job. You know, I don't have to worry about... You know, meeting new people, it'll be a familiar place. Sure. So I did tell him, well, after 5 years, if I don't like it, we're leaving. We ended up staying for, you know, 25 years. So, but it was great because I was able to, I went back to school, I got a couple more degrees, and then I started teaching. And after 9 years of marriage, then we decided to have a child, and then Mackenzie was born.
And that's kind of why we're here, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
But I wanted to, I wanted you to catch us all up. You know, and where are you living now?
In Bend, Oregon.
Bend, Oregon.
Yeah. Yes, it's on the east side of the Cascades, so we don't get a lot of rain.
Right,
it's the high desert, which is nice. Yeah,
yeah,
it's nice. I love it. We love it.
You know, I should say we are Facebook friends, so I do get to see. Some of the beautiful scenery that surrounds you.
Yes, it is beautiful.
In that part. And so is your husband still
working? He got a wonderful job at the hospital and a clinic out there. And But he's not worked. I mean, he's worked hard, but it's a different kind of work than it was here. He was pretty stressed out when he was here because he's got other things that he can do. You know, we've got the ski resort not too far away, 20 minutes.
Yeah, so, nice. Yeah, and we don't want to date this program, but we are experiencing cold weather.
Yes.
this week, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
In North Dakota, although we're from Wisconsin, so we're used to cold weather. But you know, most of us, when the cold sets in every year,
right,
we ask ourselves, why are we, and it's been a little, we sort of went from summer to winter, yep, right, in, you know, one easy step.
Yeah, but that's kind of how it happens sometimes.
Is it just Mackenzie?
She's our only child. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so that is why Michelle is on Recovery Chronicles, because Mackenzie is in recovery.
Yes.
And Michelle, being the creative person that she is, has her own way or ways of working with or dealing with, mm-hmm, or
however you want to describe it.
Yeah. So we'll spend the rest of our time talking about this. So, yeah. Tell us a little bit about Mackenzie.
Mackenzie. Yeah. So when she graduated from high school, she had applied to a college out in Olympia, Washington. And so, she went to college out there for, it was a year. And that was nice because we were, you know, Doug and I had been talking about moving out to the Northwest. So that was kind of a nice segue to that. And as far as, you know, when I look back now, I realize the trouble that she was having, not even just that first year of college, but even prior to that, I now recognize many things that she was going through. Depression and anxiety. I mean, you know, she had gone to see a child psychologist when she was here, and, you know, they had given her medication. But my daughter is very, she's stubborn, and she would not take the medication regularly, so it wasn't helping. And at that time, to be honest, my attitude was, well, she'll figure it out. You know, I figured it out, she'll figure it out. That kind of deal.
Right.
It just was a whole lot more serious than that.
Yes.
When I think about my husband's anxieties and my anxieties, hers are like three or fourfold. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
have that
I do.
Combination
yes.
of DNA, and I think it just exploded, and we didn't realize it because we knew how we dealt with ours, and we figured she could do the same. But I think it got worse when she went away to college. I mean, I think back at the times, you know, we talked on the phone, or the times she flew back, surprising me, those kinds of things. And so when we retired and moved, or were getting ready to move, we bought our house about a year prior to actually moving out there. Not quite a year, but almost a year. And she decided not to go back to college and to stay at our house. And that's when things really got kind of crazy.
And you're saying stay at the house here?
No, stay at the house in Bend that we had bought.
We had bought
the house in the summer of 2014. Yep. And she decided I think she had it in her head that she wasn't going to go back. But she didn't tell us until, you know, kind of the last minute. So she basically said, well, you know, I can take care of your house while you're, you know, before you move out here. And I think that just accelerated because she was really by herself in a big house. Her boyfriend at the time actually was going to be moving out. So he was there too. But still, it just was, you know, there was a lot of things that were happening in her head and it was just sort of exploding. But it wasn't until January 2016 that she asked us on a moment's notice. And this is, asked us on a moment's notice to meet her in the therapist's office. And this is where she revealed that she had been self-medicating her anxieties and depression with alcohol. Mm-hmm. We were stunned because we were in total denial. We were not even in that realm, neither one of us. Because we don't have those kinds of issues,
yes.
you know. We don't have those kinds of addiction issues necessarily. to that extent.
Yes.
And we were taken aback. I mean, mm-hmm. but of course, you know, when you look back, it's, you can see it all.
Sure.
You can see it all.
Sure.
So then the roller coaster ride really started to take off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't. I'll tell you something, and you won't be surprised at all. And as you know, I work at Heartview, mm-hmm. which has been around in Bismarck mm-hmm. since 1964.
Yeah.
And but our patients are trending younger mm-hmm. and younger, and frankly, yeah. that's what called me into the field. As an addiction, to become an addiction counselor, I didn't go yeah. back to school until I was, I'd have to look it up, but maybe 62 yeah. years old or something. And it's really when I found out that among our young people, it was really an epidemic.
It was an epidemic. Yep.
And this was before mm-hmm. the so-called yep. opioid
yep.
epidemic. But mm-hmm. I was working, and you probably know this, I was the United Way director here in town. And the people at my agencies, not my, but the people at the charities mm-hmm. United Way was funding were saying, help, this is, those that were working with young people, I mean,
oh, yeah.
like Charles Hall Youth Services and even Abused Adult Resource. I mean, they were saying it's just rampant. Mm-hmm. And it was not only alcohol, but of course meth was at that time,
right.
was really...
Right.
You know, becoming so, and meth has never gone away.
Mm-mm.
And
mm-mm.
now we're working, we're dealing with the opioid crisis. In North Dakota, alcohol is still king, unfortunately. But anyway, the point is, if I walked you or anyone through Heartview right now, mm-hmm. you would see almost all 20-somethings, mm-hmm. A few 30-somethings, a few...
Yeah.
50, 60 something sprinkled in, but mm-hmm. It's not the way it used to be. So,
yeah.
And you won't be surprised. Most of these young people have the fancy dancy word is comorbidity, but they're not only do they have an addiction, but they might be using three different drugs.
Yeah, exactly.
They probably have anxiety and or depression on mm-hmm. top of that. So mm-hmm. it's very, very complicated.
It is very complicated, and I've learned that the past 4 years. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I had no clue beforehand. I mm-hmm. wasn't even mm-hmm. on my
yeah.
radar.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and my daughter won't mind me saying this because I tell her I talk about her in therapy, but so she's... 28, and she has lost about 20 friends since junior high school to addiction, and I mean lost,
yeah,
to
oh,
addiction,
yeah.
Car crashes, overdoses, and suicide.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So that is the kind of world...
that they live in.
Yeah. So
yeah.
So tell us more about your daughter and her struggles.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, when we, of course, when she first told us about this, being educated people, my husband being a doctor, of course,
yes.
we thought we could deal with this privately. You know, and at that time, we were still in denial, obviously.
Because yeah,
yeah. to say that we tried yeah. to, you know, assist her privately was just ridiculous in so many ways. But, so she lived with us in the house, and we kind of watched her deteriorate basically for yeah. 6 months. For
yeah.
6 months until we actually did something about it. Because, first of all, at that time, she was 21. There's only so much you can do. And she knows that, too. My daughter's very intelligent. She knows her rights.
Yeah.
So you can't, I'm 21. You can't yeah. do anything. You can't do anything to me. I'm 21.
Yeah.
She would always say that. And so she... We tried to get her to go to a therapist on a regular basis. You know, she had taken a couple classes and she wasn't going. And, you know, she was driving and drinking. We didn't realize that till really afterwards. And she was getting sicker. And eventually, you know, her eyes were turning yellow. And I had no idea what that... I'm not a medical professional. I had no idea what that was about. So
right.
I started, you
sure.
know, Googling that and jaundice and liver disease
yep.
and liver
yep.
failure, all that.
Scary.
And she was doing the same kind of research. So she knew She knew what was going on. Yeah. But she was terrified. Yes. She didn't know what to do. She didn't really want to do anything about it. So one morning, I just decided, okay, because in the middle of the night, I'd wake up, is she going to be alive?
Yeah. Yes.
You know?
Right.
And so, I've had enough. I've had enough. And even though my husband, we didn't talk about it, one June morning, we just decided, both of us, that we were going to take her to the clinic. He told her first in the morning because he let her dog out. And then I told her just like an hour later, I'm taking her to the clinic. And when I walked out of the room, we both looked at each other, and he goes, yeah, that's what I just told her like an hour ago. So we were on the same page.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, after you've been married for so many years, I guess that's how it is. Yeah. And so we dragged her to the clinic. Yeah. I mean, it was not easy. She's very stubborn, very stubborn. And she was just stubborn, defensive, and in denial and all that stuff. Well, when we went to the clinic, they pretty much said, we can't do anything for her. She's got to be in ER. And that's when things just exploded. I mean, first of all, the shame hit because the nurses there were awful in the ER. Absolutely awful. Like treating her like she was somebody off the streets or, you know, it's so unfair. And yes, I realize they get, you know, they get that population in. But everybody needs to be treated fairly and humanely, you know? Mm-hmm. And eventually, you know, there became a change in the staff and they started treating her with a little more dignity. I mean, she still was being asked questions that she didn't want to answer, like how much do you drink a day and that kind of stuff. But then they started doing the tests and they had to drain her stomach. And they basically told her right in the beginning that she would need a liver transplant. Well, what the heck? But they don't do that there. She'd have to go to, we'd have to fly her to Portland. And it was, it was May. Was that May? I think that was May. No, it was June. And the passes are still, we'd have to drive over the pass if we drove her over the pass.
Sure.
And there's still snow. And some of them are, you know, you can't get across the pass. So then you'd have to fly her there.
Yes.
And we thought, this can't be. Mm-hmm. And then another doctor came in and we realized that was not the way we had to go. And, but she ended up staying in the hospital for 5 days. Mm-hmm. She had she had wonderful caregivers. And of course, my husband works at that hospital, so he knew everybody. And I'm sure that was kind of an interesting dynamic for him, having to expose that his daughter has a substance use disorder.
Yeah.
And, these are your coworkers, but he knew what he needed to do as a physician. He was there for her.
Right.
And, everybody was treating her like a human being, but saying, listen, you need to deal with this. And, so and you have to decide. She,
And so she entered treatment.
She did. Yeah. There was a rehab south of where we live. Mm-hmm. So she was there. And it's funny because, I mean, her stubbornness, someday it will help her. But right now it does not. She was there for 30 days. She says, well, I pretty much had enough. I'm done. And so she would tell her colleagues there at the rehab, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take my car. I'm going to drive in front of a liquor store and see if I can keep myself from buying something. Yeah, well, they all told her, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But she did.
She bought
a bottle.
Oh.
You know? And she was back at rehab the next day.
Yeah.
That was a horrific time because I was out of the country. Mm-hmm. And my husband had to deal with it firsthand.
Yeah.
And he had to take her back to the rehab. But at least you know, every time she's relapsed, she it's not very long. Mm-hmm. The relapse is not long. It's like maybe the longest, maybe 4 days, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kind of a binge.
And she, and then she realizes she needs to go to detox and get back on track.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Well, recovery is different for every person.
Every person.
Recovery can look very different from one person. Mm-hmm. It's not always about total abstinence for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we need to be at peace with that sometimes. I mean, and be happy when someone who is struggling very, very much is able to have periods of sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So was that her first treatment?
That was her first treatment, So she went back and she ended up staying there. I can't remember. It was at least 45 days, maybe a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But you know, that first time, it still doesn't, it just didn't do the trick. She was still very stubborn.
Yeah.
She went to sober living in town in Bend after that for a few weeks, but she of course had met a young man in rehab, and he lived in Seattle, so she had to go to Seattle.
Sure.
So then that's when she ended up in Seattle.
Yeah. You said she went to sober living. You mean it was a halfway house type thing?
It was a recovery house. So they, certain rules and it was in town, and I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks that she was there.
Sure. How old is she now?
She's 25.
Okay.
She's right now. 25.
How's she doing?
She's, she had a relapse not too long ago, in September, right before her 25th birthday. Her boyfriend died of an overdose in July.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Very recent.
Yep.
She had been with him for a year and a half. He was more, he was a good friend, even though they were not good for each other,
Oh, yeah.
They still held each other up. So that's been pretty tough.
Yeah.
Pretty tough on her. She's in a floating stage right now. She went back to inpatient, which is the third inpatient she's done.
Okay.
Or it's been more
Is she an inpatient right now?
No, she's out.
But that wasn't
she's
then.
She's out. Yeah. Uh-huh. But it was only 2.5 weeks ago. She's struggling.
Where's she living?
She's been in LA for 2.5 years. So the second rehab that she went to was after she relapsed in Seattle, and I went to get her in Seattle, and we drove down to LA and
it's tough stuff, isn't it?
It is.
And I'm getting even teary-eyed, because have you read the book? It's a book I always recommend, Beautiful Boy. Isn't that something? I need to see the movie, but
I know the
movie will be quite emotional, but I just loved that book, and it's a father wrote that book, the father of a son who was a meth, a very serious meth addict. And the unique thing, the father was a journalist, and so he was used to investigating, and I think he interviewed every meth therapist in the world, every addiction therapist, and the son continued to relapse, and as so often happens, I think that book is really a gift.
There's so many books out there that are gifts. I read one from a local author in Bend. One of my writing teachers told me about it. She wrote about her daughter, who was in recovery for, relapsed in recovery for quite some time. And that kind of set up the stage for me to realize that I wasn't alone, that there are ways that I can deal with this. And then I just kept reading all kinds of books, whether they were kind of scientific books about what happens to your brain, or whether they were stories about people's experience with addiction and substance use. So that's been so helpful. That's been so helpful. We did go to Al-Anon for a little while in the beginning there. My husband's not one to let it all out like I am. But what he says when he does talk, it's always profound. That was quite an experience listening to other parents and what they've gone through with their loved ones, or whether it was a spouse or whatever. That also helped.
Sure.
Keep it, just keeping it real and just realizing you're not alone.
Yeah, which is, I think it's so important that you're here talking about this. And I'm not trying to do a commercial for Heartview, but we have a Monday night program called the HEART program, H-E-A-R-T, which stands for Helping Everyone Achieve Recovery Today. It's just it's a corny acronym, but it's designed especially for parents. And it runs Monday nights from 6 until 8. The first hour is educational, and we may watch a video together or have
That's
a guest.
Nice.
But I'd love for you to come in sometime as a guest speaker. We have a break, and then the second hour is sharing, whoever wants to.
Sure.
And that has been a very, very popular program, but I've helped run that program quite a few times, and what you hear most of all is help, is how do we do this from these parents and from these spouses? how do we do this? And why does he, why do they always go back? You know, why do they have to use? Mm-hmm. What's a, and I'm sure you hear that, or maybe ask yourselves the same. And that's why I think books such as Beautiful Boy kind of help to answer that the question about the nature of addiction.
Well, and I think more attention needs to be paid to the underlying reasons why somebody wants to numb themselves.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's not the substances, to be honest with you. It's why they're doing it.
Right.
And I have learned that in the past few years, especially. Why does she keep going back to it?